Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned in to the Conscious Power. Culture Unite. Junior Gong. Grand Bird. Return from Mecca.
The deeper you proceed into darkness, you recognize the difference between the brave and the heartless. Perception turns from visual stimulation to aural vibration, and you decipher reality from the false. I met a guru who told me life was in the breath, that the power was in the black behind your eyes, and they can keep the rest. Stress not, cause elevation is the way we get down. We bring it from the bottom of the root to the ground. Rolls around sound, not just speakers. We build them from the ground like Zulu parliament teachers. I reach alive and direct from the top of Mount Zion. Fitted to get you fully charged up like an ion. I'm power moving like a rock, rock steady. Kids crushing them like fun cause my lyrics are super heavy. Ready or not, I'm coming, watch me drop, drop, ride on them. Reset the circuit breakers and I get gone on them. Dark is the absence of light. Angry, always on my square cause I'm right. Original, bloodline black like the night. Starlight, third eye vision, true sight. Dark is the absence of light. Angry, always on my square cause I'm right. Original, bloodline black like the night. Starlight, third eye vision, true sight. My body made from deep space particles. That's probably why they call me Starrock the astronomical. A saint Necronomicon. We go deep past the epidermal to the white meat. They can't reach where I'm headed, so don't even try me. I read ancient texts from what the Metsum. I'm in the sectoral, so don't make me bless them. My pyramid is at the center of my brain matter. These boys like to call me skinny, but honey, my frontal lobe fatter. Absorbing light from every angle. My halo got you like the candles to the hollow black angel. I take flight on eagle wings. You can catch me at position 90 degrees, please. If you don't believe me, then just ask the one called John the Baptist. Cause I'm the one who told him use the water to cleanse the masses. Dark is the absence of light. Angel, always on my square cause I'm right. Original, bloodline black like the night. Sabra, third eye vision, true sight. Dark is the absence of light. Angel, always on my square cause I'm right. Original, bloodline black like the night. Sabra, third eye vision, true sight.
Aline Bay Show, and no doubt we have a special guest tonight. It's one of the honors I definitely have to say in order to have this brother on. He was one of the inspirations as far as going into the Moorish movement. Is Brother Hakeem Bay. Brother Hakeem, are you here?
Yes, indeed. Peace, Islam.
Greetings, Islam, brother. How you doing tonight?
All is well. All is definitely well.
That's excellent. That's excellent. No doubt. We're going to go into the secret of secrets tonight, and that's basically anywhere you want to go with the information. So, you know, where you want to begin? You want to begin with what you're doing here lately and the websites and the different other things that you have going on with the streaming and everything?
Yeah, I guess I might as well, you know, I don't know who's familiar, who's not familiar. You know, there's a lot of different things going on, but I'm just kind of like, familiarize people first, you know, who I am, and then I'll just kind of bring things up to date. This is Brother Hakeem Bay. I'm sure many of you probably seen, you know, my videos on YouTube, which most of them I didn't even put up there. You know, they was put up there by other people. But I'm sure you see some of the videos up there, and I want to let everyone know, too, I also published the Journal of the Moorish Paradigm books. And so I just wanted to direct everyone to the web page for that, in case they're not aware of those 13 books called Journal of the Moorish Paradigm. It contains some very important information regarding our, you know, history, civilization, you know, the whole science of what the Prophet brought, you know, and why it made us a nation within this nation. And that can be found at allthingsonearth.com/ J as in journal, M as in Moorish, and P as in paradigm, JMP. So that's allthingsonearth.com/JMP, which stands for Journal Moorish Paradigm. And that'll, you know, bring you up to speed with a lot of things we was dealing with there. And so since that time, you know, I moved on to write some other books and, you know, put together some other websites dealing with information coming from a slightly different angle, let's say. You know, so just to bring everybody up to speed on that, from that time, I came in contact with a product called Moringa. And I actually wrote a book on Moringa as well. And so if you go to that website, allthingsmoringa.com, you get information about Moringa. I have the book up there. I have videos up there. I have the whole John Hopkins School of Medicine's research paper regarding Moringa up there. And it's a very important thing for everyone to know about. It's you know, I consider it a tree of life, actually. And it's one of the most, it is one of the most nutritious plants on the planet Earth. And the thing I found interesting about it when I was doing research on Moringa was that in the book, I put two maps in there, and I show one map showing all the places in the world where hunger and starvation is an issue. And I put the map up there where that shows all the places on the earth where Moringa grows wild. And if you superimpose two maps, they match, showing that all the places in the world where, you know, where hunger and all these things are happening, the Moringa plant is growing wild. And you could actually, you could live off Moringa. You could live off just Moringa and water indefinitely. That's how, that's how nutritious Moringa is. And the seeds from the Moringa plant purify water. The seed, the nut kernels purify water. One kernel will purify 1 liter of water. So, you know, it's like the ultimate survival plan. I mean, you know, I mean, and there's a lot more to it, you know. So I, you know, did the research on it, and I put that into a book because there's so much, you know, different research done on it. I mean, from the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine's research paper where they said it's antifungal, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, and anti-cancer. And this is Johns Hopkins, you know, School of Medicine research paper. So that whole paper's up there on the site as well as the book I wrote you could download for free also. And that's All Things Moringa, spelled M-O-R-I-N-G-A, allthingsmoringa.com. And so that was a, you know, an interesting thing. And I, you know, I branched off to do a little research and put that book together. Then from there, you know, from there, I came in contact with a whole, something that I've been really wanting to do for a long time, but in, I would say, 2000, I would say in January, right around the beginning of 2011. Well, no, let me step back a little bit. Actually, in 2010, is when, in the summer of 2010, was when I got the first inclination of the power of this, was during the summer of 2010. At that time, the Spirit moved me to, how could I even say it? You know, well, looking back now, like I said, hindsight 2020, I would say the Spirit moved me to program for something, to program to manifest something. Something that's like so incredible, it would just seem totally far-fetched. But what the divine had me do was keep a journal within the Akalia system. This particular thing is called Tahutic writing, where you keep a journal, and but in that journal you write in a certain particular type of way. Now we all know that Tahuti is considered, you know, the god of writing, at the same time the god of magic. And we also realize that magic is just really just high science. For those who don't understand it, they refer to it as magic.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? This is why they oftentimes you hear historical references where they refer to the Moors as magi, M-A-G-I, magi. It's because the technology, when we first confronted them, our technology was so advanced that they thought it was magic. You know? And so, anyway, going back to Tahuti, so he being the god of magic, in the god of writing, the god of, so you might as well say also the god of writing, the god of high technology, high science, you know. And so, Tahutic writing, as we know, our ancestors, especially in ancient Kemet, you know, were master, was prolific record keepers. You
right.
know, we kept records, we documented, that's part of science, you know, being a scientist or being a more scientist or being a scientist was keeping records, you know, keeping a journal, keeping a log, you know, of the results of what you, you know, what you see, what you observe, you know. And so, you know, in Tahutic writing, what you do, and like I said, in Akalia, you know, just to fast forward a bit, just to put everything in context, what I'm leading up to is Akalia, which is the system, which is a programming language for programming reality. That was shown to me over the summer of 2011, was revealed to me during the summer of 2011. What it is, the same way, you know, oftentimes, you know, we hear said, and I actually have documented evidence now, or I'm able to prove, show and prove that what we call, what we're living in right now, what we refer to as reality, is really a simulation. I mean, the best analogy is a computer simulation. It's actually a simulation. The laws of physics, everything, science, actually proves it. And it's funny, since the time I launched that Secret Secrets website dealing with the subject matter, since that time, there's been research papers that came out since that time, as recent as that, by MIT scientists, by scientists all over the world, saying and proving the same thing, that this is a simulation. I mean, when you look at it deeper, and it's a simulation, you know, put together and maintained by our ancestors and us. It's called consensus reality.
That makes sense, because I know I read a book back in the days, which that brother Bobby Hemme put me onto, which was going back in the 90s, early 90s. It was called The Holographic Universe.
Holographic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. I remember speaking about that book, you know, in Atlanta, and that's when I said to them, you know, this is a virtual reality that we actually lay out in front of us. And, you know, so the question is, are we walking on the beach or are we laying out the beach in front of us as we go along? And that's what we're actually doing, whether we realize it or not. We are manifesting or rendering this thing. In quantum physics, they'll tell you that, you know, when they boil down to it, It's just a vast field of potential energy. You know, when they say electron, you know, we was taught that electron is like a ball going around, or like a planet going around, you know, the nucleus. You know, like almost like a ball. You know, that's how the models even portrayed in school, you know, the labs and everything.
Right.
You know, when really that what they shown you as a ball or a point, you know, or as a specific point of matter in a specific location, is false. That's not the reality. You know what I'm saying? It's really, you know, that's a probability point. They're saying this, you know, in a probability, and they're saying that, you know, it can exist here. That this ball of energy, let's say, you know, but really, you know, when they go in, you know, as they go down into the quantum, onto the quantum levels, is, you know, there's nothing physically solid there. It's just vibrations.
True.
There's nothing physical there. You know what I'm saying? So what we call reality is really a consensus reality. Consensus as in mutually agreed upon convention. Just like the dollar bill. The dollar, there's nothing backing up the dollar but a mutually agreed upon convention that says, I'll recognize this as being worth a dollar if you recognize it as being worth a dollar.
Right.
And that's the only thing that's holding it up. Really, it's just good faith. It's just faith. It's just that belief. It's just that mutually agreed upon convention. So what we call, you know, reality really is a simulation. And it could be shown, see, there's certain things that we wouldn't realize until certain times, until we actually invented, until we actually manifested certain things, such as the computer, that will begin to be revealed to us. You know, there were certain things that was like certain secrets of Allah, of the universe, of creation, that was embedded on deep levels, on certain levels or whatever, that we wouldn't recognize until we actually was able to see these things and begin to put together a certain terminology. Computer terminology, when I say the computer, the universe is really one great big vast computer, and everything physical, tangible within it is just like hardware, you know. And Akalia, and I'm gonna back up again, but I just want to show where I'm headed there. Akalia is a system similar to in the movie Matrix, where Morpheus was in that all white room with Neo, and he said to him, he said, this is our construct. This is our loading program, where we load everything that we need into the matrix. All right, boom. Let's stop right there. He said it's a construct, and it's a loading program. And so that's what Akalia is. It's a programming language whose purpose is to actually program reality. If this is a simulation, then naturally it's programmable. The question is, how do you program it? And so that's the bottom line. Now, this science, the secret of secrets, is this science. The secret of secrets is that man always had the power to actually change reality. Man is the maker of the reality that he exists within.
Time never was, almost, man was not. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but the secret was kept. The secret was kept amongst a small group, And what happened was that these ones are the ones who, I mean, and it wasn't nothing negative. And in other words, at that time, it was seen that, all right, man has the ability to change reality. It was like, that's deep, that's powerful. But if all men had this knowledge right now and exercised their abilities to change reality, they felt that at that time that many were using it for wrong and vulgar and lower self purposes.
Right.
They said, therefore, we must, you know, protect this knowledge and keep this away from the masses. This is why in the Matrix, which I refer to as Matrix 4, Matrix 4.0, which the Olmecs refer to as the Fourth World, which ended on December 21st, 2012.
Right.
All right. That matrix, the motif, the equation of that matrix was a handful of sovereigns and masses of subjects. That was the equation. And those handful of sovereigns knew the secret of secrets, the secret of these powers of man, and knew how to exercise it. And the rest were subjects. The rest of the masses of people were subjects, or subject to these sovereigns, because they did not know they had the powers. The sovereigns that knew that humans had this power to change reality, the masses who did not know that, the sovereigns galvanized their power to achieve their agendas through mass rituals. Mass rituals was the way that the priesthood galvanized that power. They knew that man had this energy, but they knew if they was able to galvanize it and direct it a certain way, it could have mass, incredible, you know, world-changing, civilization-changing results, you know. And so this is what they was able to do, you know, just through this knowledge. And this is why they seen themselves as the shepherds of the people. This is why in ancient Egypt you see that the pharaoh, the royalty, and the priesthood, that they had the shepherd's crook.
Mm-hmm.
And the shepherd's crook was the symbol of the ones who knew the secret of secrets actually being the shepherds of the masses. And naturally, if they was the shepherds, that means the people was what? The sheep, or sheeple.
Right.
Now, it wasn't necessarily bad in the sense, I mean, I kind of see what they were saying. I mean, imagine people now in their lower state now having
right.
that type of power, the things that they would try to do.
That's
you
right.
know, so they see themselves at one hand as a protective thing, but later on in time, you know, as of now, you know, now's the time. Matrix 5 began December 21st, 2012. I'm going to speak more about that a little bit later on. And the equation of Matrix 5 is going to be this. Remember, the Matrix 4 equation was a handful of sovereigns govern and sovereign over masses of subjects, those who are subject to. Because remember, sovereign is that which is subject unto none.
Right.
And so you had either you was a sovereign or a subject. Later on, the so-called sovereigns, or those who knew the secrets became known as Illuminati and so on and so forth. Illuminated ones first, Rasanaya. You know, then later on, Illuminati, so on and so forth. These are ones who know the deal, who know who we are. They had a programming language. Matrix 4 had its construct, you know, which was found later on embedded in what became known as Gematria, which is a programming language.
Right.
Those those who know computers, you know, everything in this universe, everything physical in this plane of things made manifest, as a prophet referred to it as, has a source code. It was built up, created, and maintained based on a source code. And humans, that source code is known as the DNA code. So right there, you can see it's a code. They
right.
just tell you right there in the name, the DNA code. That's the source code for humans,
mm-hmm.
is the DNA code. And that code is so vast, it could go back and forth from the Earth to the Sun thousands of times back and forth. That's how long that code. Imagine being a pages, a source code. Imagine how many pages that would be. All right, so just to show you how intricate the source code. Remember, this is all a simulation.
Mm-hmm.
The source code, the DNA code, the source code is, I mean, it's a DNA code is incredible. incredible compact. You talk about compressed. You talk about zip files. It's the ultimate in compression. It's the ultimate in zip file technology. You know, so that's why when I use this analogy of computer and I talk about computer terminology being the best science analogy of for man, God, and the universe, I don't. Some people say, "Well, how could that be our team? The computer came was just recently created." I'm saying no. I'm saying the universe is the original computer, and the computer that man created later on, that's the analogy. You see what I'm saying? So in other words, we was just replicating. It's like we create, and I'm going to talk about that, creating worlds within worlds, simulations within simulations, because that's what I did in terms of creating Matrix 5.
Gotcha.
Virtual world is literally creating a world within this world. I have time to get to that too. But all right, so now Akalia, the programming language, is the programming language for Matrix 5. Matrix 4 was Gematria, which you see in the Masonic Lodge, you know, dealing with the different characters and the numerical equivalents.
Right.
It's all tied into the tarot card system. All of this was part of a construct, a programming language.
Right, what we refer to as Hebrew numerology.
Yep, that's it. It was a program. And so the ones who knew the deal realized that this was a simulation. And really, even though they may not call it programming, see, we bless now because we have computer terminology, which now will clear up everything.
Sure.
What happened was that in 2007, I went on a vision quest at that time, in 2007, and I left right at the time of Garvey's birthday, the 17th, and the divine told me, said, Akeem, pack up everything that you have and put it in storage, and I want you to go on a vision quest to certain places, certain sacred places on this land, which I'm going to show you, and you're going to receive certain revelations at that time, at those places. And so when the divine talk, I just hear and obey.
Okay.
And so when it said pack it up, I packed it up. Everybody thought I was crazy. You know, what? You going on a vision? What? My mother was like, what? You know, naturally certain people had to tell, you know, family, children, everything. I had to let them know, I got to do this.
Right.
You know, so this is something I have to do. You know, it was like Enoch, even when they talk about Enoch, and the divine said to Enoch, you must separate yourself from the sons of men for a period of time because there's certain things I have to reveal to you. And that's what Enoch did eventually. Now, what's deep about it, right? That's what was said to me in essence. And before I left, I was given the name Metatron.
Got you.
Metatron.
Right.
When that name, the day that name was given to me,
right,
I just burst out in tears.
Check
how deep it is.
Right.
When that name was given to me, just before the vision quest, but I knew I had to go on the vision quest, I just burst out in tears. I couldn't stop. When I went to the library to do further research on the name, tears were still coming down. That's how how powerful the effect that name had on me, right?
Right.
So I go on this vision quest. 3 months that took me from New York to the border of Utah and Nevada. I was on the road for all 3 months, never staying in a hotel, none of that, not one day during that whole vision quest. I was just in the mountains. I was in the woods in Shenandoah National Forest. I was up in the mountains of Colorado, 12,000 feet. I slept in the canyons in Moab, Utah. All these places, by the burning bush in Colorado. I mean, it was an incredible journey. But anyway, the journey ended, and I left. They gave me the name Metatron. The journey, the vision quest ended, and guess where? Enoch, Utah. That's where my van broke down. My vehicle broke down. Enoch, Utah. I was like, wow.
Exactly.
That just shows you, and you can look it up on a map. As a matter of fact, what was funny, after the vision quest, my vehicle broke down, and it just died. It's just literally, I mean, I took it for 100, after it actually died, the engine, one of the cylinders went. I actually drove it for, me and this mechanic rigged it with a hydraulic thing on it, and I actually had to pump it. I actually had to perform the role of the cylinder, the other cylinder that broke down with this pump. And I went for another 100 miles like that to finally Enoch, Utah. It was like, boom. And afterwards, I parked it in the Walmart parking lot. I went on the Google Earth and I looked, and I actually seen the van in on Google Earth from the sky.
Right.
I wonder if I gotta check to see if it's still there. I knew it was it because the van literally just rolled into the parking space at an angle. It wasn't like lined up straight. And when I looked and I seen the exact van at an angle, like diagonal, in the parking space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, wow, you know. But yeah, so that was then. So that, at that vision quest in 2007, it gave me crazy insights, crazy revelations took place at that time. As a matter of fact, there was one particular revelation that took place in Colorado, in Glenwood and Rifle, Colorado, where it's like I was like taken up, right? And that night, I had a dream, and in the dream, one of my descendants came back from the future and told me that if I don't do what I have to carry out, that she wouldn't exist. See, in other words, one of my descendants from the future came back in time and told me I had to carry out certain things, otherwise she would not exist.
Gotcha.
And then something else happened involving Tahuti. And Tahuti was like up above, and Tahuti told me, said, Hakeem, you have certain powers that you haven't even activated. You don't even realize yet. And I was like, teach me. I was like begging, please teach me, teach me, teach me, right? Boom, now fast forward. That was 2007. So now, come up to 2010, summer 2010. And all of a sudden, I got the notion to manifest this thing. I'm not even going to say what it is because it was so far-fetched. It was so seemingly impossible. But what I did was the Tahutic writing. And in the Tahutic writing, you write in such a way as if, not that you're wishing for that thing or anything like that, but as if that thing is already reality. And
yeah.
So it's like you keeping a journal. So imagine that, you know, I wanted to manifest some land and a house.
Right.
Right? But this is at some future date when it was actually going to manifest. Right? So in the Tahuti writing, I'm writing as if that's already a reality. I'm writing in my journal.
Gotcha.
On that land, in that house, it's already manifest.
That's right.
And so I did that for like, at that time, but the thing was, I did it for 30 days. I wrote in a journal book, just like that. You know, put the date at the top and that future date as if it was like at that moment, as if I'm writing a journal at that time. And I did that for 30 days. But then after 30 days, I stopped. I didn't write nothing about it. I stopped. It was so far-fetched anyway. I just stopped, right? You know, that following moon cycle, that following month, I was at a particular place, and that thing started to manifest. It actually started manifesting, and I said, whoa, I had to take a step back. I was like, hold up. It actually began manifesting. This thing that was so seemingly impossible, so far-fetched, actually started manifesting. And that's when I realized right there how powerful this was. But I realized that there was more to it that I had to, like, really dig down. I said, well, all right, there's more to this whole thing. Eventually, the Tahutic writing just became just one of eight components in the Akalia system. That's just one component, which in and of itself alone is enough to change reality. Combined with the other seven components, forget about it. All right, so that manifested then, right? Then I said, I realized, wow, this I'm on to something. I said, I can feel it in my bones, but I said, I need time. You know, sometimes you just need time to think. You know, you need time. I said, you know what? I told the divine, I said, just like the other vision quest, I said, I need to go on another vision quest for 90 days, 3 moon cycles, because I do everything according to moon cycles, right? Starting off on a new moon. So I said, I was, you know, speaking to my eyes, I said, I need 90 days, 3 moon cycles, where I could just focus. Not called going into the laboratory, going into the basements. You know what I'm saying? I could just focus. I said, I want to just pay up all my bills, pay all rent, pay off everything, so I could just focus and not be distracted. Because I want to get to the bottom of this thing that I'm feeling, but it's like, I just need time to think. When I focus, I like to focus. I don't want no distractions. I want to just go in totally. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I said, I got to write a program to manifest that, to manifest the money I need to just do that. You know, I programmed for, I think it was between 10 and 12,000. And I wrote that program, right? That week, on April the 1st, of all days, so-called April Fool's Day,
right.
I got a phone call that day. And that brought about something that eventually manifested exactly what I needed. By June, I had exactly what I needed. I said, all right, I'm going to keep my end of the bargain. I'm going in for that, you know, knocked off everything. Next 3 months, on June, July, and August, 2011. I said, I'm going in. And so what happened was this, dealing with the Akalia system. The shamans, when they go see them shamans, and they in them jungles and forests or whatever, and them shamans, they know about this plant is good for this. This plant is used for that. This plant is not used for this. They say, how do they know this? Like, for instance, like the ayahuasca mixture deals with getting one plant that kills off an enzyme in the stomach so that this other plant could be absorbed into the brain.
Right.
Now, how do you just, out of all the millions of plants up in the Amazon, how did you know? Or how did you know to get this specific plant in this proportion, this plant in this proportion, and make some concoction out of it that will have this effect?
Well, I know and what Dr. George Washington Carver said. He said the plants talk to him.
Thank you. That's the answer. That's the answer. All the shamans, including George Washington Carver, who was one of the greatest shamans,
that's right. What
they all say.
That's what
the plants themselves told us
how
to use them.
Mm.
And so that's the same thing that happened with Akalia.
Mm.
Akalia revealed, in other words, let me back up. Let me just say this first, just to put everything in perspective, just to give the perspective of what's going on here. We as humans, we have two computers in us, you know. First, let me say this. Our bodies, our physical bodies, are avatars in this simulation.
Right.
All right, the same way you have a virtual world and you log in, and just like Matrix 5, virtual world, you create an account, you log in, and you will have an avatar. The avatar is that which you navigate in that world with, just like the movie Avatar. Our consciousness, really, we are just consciousness.
In other words, I was space suits.
Right. We actually injected into this.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I found out that dreaming, the reason why we dream, part of dreaming is the process of integrating our consciousness into our physical bodies, into our avatar.
That's right.
That process like in the movie Avatar when he put him into that tube, and then from there he was injected into that body.
Mm-hmm.
That's what dreaming. Dreaming is that process. Reintegrating your consciousness into your physical body.
Right. So
that's why once you're well integrated, you wake up.
Right.
Huh?
So if we're talking about the language that you're referring, we're talking about states of consciousness.
Right. That's all we really are. We're
right.
Just beings of consciousness. And we can have it really any avatar in any world, in any simulation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to get back to that in a minute because that leads to something else now. You know? But check it now. Now check it. So now, in this simulation, Matrix 4, this physical world, which is probably referred to as the plane of things made manifest, of fleshy, carnal things, right? This Matrix 4, right? Our avatars in us, we have two computers in us.
Mm-hmm.
We have a binary computer, and we have a quantum computer.
Gotcha.
The binary computer is connected with the conscious mind and the whole ego complex, and it's mainly accessed through the left brain, left hemisphere of the brain.
Right, so that would be like our abdominal brain.
Right, that on that left side.
Things. Right.
Right, now the conscious mind, that's the binary computer. The binary computer is tied in with the conscious mind, the ego, linear thought, scientific thought, reasoning, all that stuff like that.
Right.
Now, the other computer is the quantum. That's the subconscious mind. Right. That's the holistic mind. That one is quantum. That one deals with art, music, all that stuff like that.
Right. Dealing with
that
intuition.
One is quantum.
Right. Intuition.
Right.
Right. Gotcha.
All that. The autonomic nervous system, all that is that right side now. It's the quantum computer. So now, this is the interesting thing. In this society that we live in, it's designed such that the binary computer, the left brain, the conscious mind, actually filters out and suppresses aspects of the subconscious mind, of the quantum computer. So in this society, you literally have a binary computer controlling a much more powerful quantum computer.
Hence creating what we know as the Matrix.
Right.
Got you.
See?
Got you.
So now, we have these two computers. We have the binary, and the way, just to show you how powerful, much more powerful one is than the other, how much more powerful the quantum is. The quantum, right? If I took a sheet of paper and I wrote 100 equations, 100 mathematical problems, equations on that piece of paper, and put them before the binary computer to be solved, it will solve all of them, and probably pretty quickly. But it has to solve it sequentially. And sequence one at a time.
Right.
That's the way the binary computer works. It'll solve all 100 problems, but it'll solve it one at a time,
right,
sequentially.
Right.
Now, if I flash it and put it in front of the subconscious mind, it will just flash and immediately solve all equations simultaneously, immediately.
True.
This is how the quantum mind works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we as humans, we have both in us, but what this society does is disables our quantum powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you an example of how it does it in reading. You have regular reading, the way people read now regularly, that's binary computer reading, sequentially,
right,
one word at a time,
mm-hmm,
right? Now you have quantum reading. Now, to show you the difference, right? In quantum reading, your eyes are literally like scanners on a computer.
Right.
And in quantum reading, when the eyes are held a certain way, scanning through pages, you could flip pages like this.
Right. Speed reading. I learned that when I was a teenager. Right.
All right. And your subconscious mind will immediately flash each page and know each page. Another example of how that works is like, if you take a deck of cards, and on the quantum mind, if you use the quantum mind, you could flash the deck of cards, and the quantum mind remembers every single card in the exact order that it's in.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen a guy do that one time when I was on 125th Street. He came by my table one day, we pulled out a deck of cards and flashed it, and he knew each card in the exact order.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now, that's the quantum. So now, that's quantum reading. Now let's go back to binary reading that we're taught when we're young, and how that disables the quantum reading. When we come up, and we right before school, you know, we start teaching how to read and all stuff like that, and we sound out the words. Then school, preschool, whatever they say, you know, the kids, children are reading a book, and they say, the cat ran down the block. The whole class, the cat ran down the block. All of the children saying it together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, the teacher may say, all right, now each one of y'all, just say it in your head. Don't say it out loud, but just say each word in your head to yourself. And you see the little kids saying, the cat, right? You see their little lips moving. They're not making no sound, but their little lips are moving, sounding out the words, right?
Right.
See, that's binary.
Yeah.
Now you just dumbed yourself down, because now if you peg reading to the amount of, how fast you could pronounce words, you only could pronounce maybe 200, 300 words per minute.
Right.
So therefore, you limit your ability to read to 200, 300 words per minute, because you pegged it to sounding out individual words one at a time in sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And that disables now, and now by using that, developing that on the left brain, now the quantum way of reading, just flashing it, that you know, becomes disabled, because you're not using it. You know how to say, when you don't use it, you lose it. And so that becomes disabled. And that's just an example to show you how this society enables and strengthens the left brain, conscious mind, you know, more masculine brain, reasoning and logic, and it suppresses and disables the quantum, more feminine, subconscious mind. Now, these two, now check out this two now, this difference. The conscious mind, right, each one of us has our own individual conscious mind tied with our own individual ego, E-G-O, ego complex, right? But when it comes to the subconscious mind, we each don't have our own separate individual subconscious mind. There's only one subconscious mind, and we merely partake in it.
Right, collective consciousness.
Right, it's only one. We don't have our, as we have our own individual ego, conscious mind, we don't have our own separate individual subconscious mind. It's only one. It's like the internet.
Right.
When you log onto the internet via your computer, you're not locked. You, it's not your own personal internet.
Right.
It's millions of other people on there, and they did whether you logged in or not.
That's right.
That's how the subconscious mind is.
True.
So now, going back to the source code, if everything in the physical universe has a source code, humans, the DNA code, that means that's a program.
That's right.
So if you have a program, what is the operating system or platform that the program is running on? Just like your computer, you have Windows operating system or Mac operating system.
Right.
The operating system is what the programs run on.
Right.
Without no operating system, the program can't run. The program not going to run itself. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you buy a program from the store, lay it on your desk. You see what I'm saying? If you don't put the CD-ROM in there or whatever, or, you know, put it so that it can run off the operating system of your computer, it's just going to sit there.
Right.
And so therefore, if everything has source code, like humans have DNA code, everything has source code, everything's a program within the simulation, what is the operating system that is running on? This is what...
Question.
To me during that period of time. And it might sound trivial or whatever, but this is a major, major key. The subconscious mind is the operating system for the whole universe.
Yep.
Every program runs on it, including your own personal quote-unquote programs run on the subconscious mind. This is what you do. This is why hypnosis, we're taught to program what? The subconscious mind.
The subconscious mind, right.
Because the subconscious mind, what? Hears and obeys if you could get to it.
Right.
And communicate with it.
Right.
So in hypnosis, we're told, you know, swing this watch, do this or whatever, to distract the conscious mind, which is sitting up in front like the security guard.
Mm-hmm.
Once you got the conscious mind distracted, now you can get around them and plant suggestions, i.e. program the subconscious mind.
Right, because the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's fantasy.
There you go.
The only thing it knows is what it programs it, right.
And that is what's real. What is real is what it believes. When I was picking up hypnosis to become a certified hypnotherapist, I used to hypnotize my wife, right?
Right.
And so she said, I don't feel nothing. I said, how do I know if I'm hypnotized? So one day I did it, right? And I told her, I said, you see my briefcase over there? I was able to tell when she was in a hypnotic state immediately. As a matter of fact, whenever I used to do the hypnosis with her, I used to always put on a white robe. But that became a trigger. So as soon as we started the hypnosis session, I put on a white robe. When she realized that, she was already in the hypnotic trance. It already started to trigger her immediately into hypnotic trance. So I already knew, I could already tell when she was in a hypnotic state. I said to her, I said, you see my briefcase over there? I said, it's filled with tons and tons of compressed steel. I said, go lift it up. She couldn't get it off the ground. And then I told her, she had this like dazed, this like amazed look on her face, right? Then I told her, I said, all right, you see it now? I said, it's full with feathers, light as could be. I said, go lift it. She lifted it up like it was nothing. And that just showed you, I could have told her, I said, there's a physical tiger in this room with us right now.
Right.
And she would have seen a physical tiger from her. She couldn't even felt the breath, the hot breath breathing on her arm.
That's right.
That's how real it is.
Right. That's
all right,
the signs
so subconscious.
Placebos. Right, the signs of placebo, medicine placebos. Right.
Exactly, exactly. We don't realize the degree to which we create this reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like in quantum physics, they say that it's called the observer effect. When we observe things, they take on physical form. They have atoms that behave like like atoms, you know, it's supposed to have behave. But then when we turn away from it, when we're not looking at things, they become just wave, just energy, it with no form.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And so we don't realize it's without consciousness. Whenever we focus, like when they were in the quantum field laboratories, they would do experiments. And these quarks and neutrinos and all this stuff like that will behave one way in one laboratory and another way in another laboratory based on the preconceived notions of the scientists in those laboratories. So then they begin to say, wait a minute, are we discovering these particles or are we creating them?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where quantum physicists start to take them down the road. They say, you know what?
That's right.
We don't want to get into that.
That's
we
right.
don't want to get into the spiritual, you know what I'm saying? We don't want to get into the spiritual aspects of this whole thing. You know, let's just focus, let's just say this is a model and it works and is able to predict things, but the spiritual connotation of it, we're not even going to get into that.
Right. Well, that's the science of quantum physics, you know, because the word quantum means to leap or go beyond, but so do the word metaphysics, which means
exactly.
to go beyond. So they both mean the same thing. Itself. One is seen as pseudo, and the other one is seen as something in which that has now become scientific. But yet, like you said, it's just simply based on models because they don't want to go into the spiritual
aspect. They don't want to go there. They don't want to go there.
That's
and
right.
see, so the conscious, the subconscious mind is programmed. I refer to the subconscious mind as the quantum computer. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
I refer to her as Sophia.
Right.
Sophia,
yes.
meaning the wisdom.
The wisdom, right.
And that's where the term, and even the ancients referred to her as Sophia.
Right.
You
the
know.
Referred to it as Shekinah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And remember, a philosopher,
right.
Philo, meaning lover of, and Sophie, meaning wisdom, mm-hmm. lover of wisdom.
That's right.
And remember, the first chapter of Quran, of the Holy Quran of the More Scientific America,
mm-hmm.
who's speaking in that first chapter?
Right.
Where it says, versus the protoplast and all the stuff like that.
That's right.
It says wisdom speaks.
Wisdom speaks.
Sophia.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Sophia is the quantum computer. It's a subconscious mind.
Okay,
all
so
right.
that's about it to the Oracle in the Matrix.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name? Sophia Stewart.
Sophia Stewart. That's
Stewart
right.
means to usher in what? The wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so here we go. And it was Sophia Stewart. She was the one who gave me the name Morpheus. That's where I got that name from, was Sophia Stewart. Every time when you come into Matrix 5, and she can see everybody refers to me as Morpheus. So in case somebody gets confused, Hakeem Bain, that's the same thing. And it was her that, it was her, me and Sophia, it's like we go back past lives.
Mm-hmm.
The way we connected up, we knew something from past lives because I wrote about her in the 13th Journal of the Morse Paradigm. I did an
right.
article about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, man, I would love to meet her. 2 weeks later, after publishing that, me and her was talking on the phone for hours, like we knew each other for millions of years.
Man, I need to get her on here.
Listen, man, she's that sister, Sophia, anyway, that sister's something else. She's on a whole nother level.
Right.
She's on a whole other level. But anyway, so that quantum computer, that subconscious mind, I refer to as Sophia. What happened was that, and it's a quantum computer, and remember now, Matrix 4, the Masons and them, they had the old programming language called Gematria.
Right.
What happened to me over the period, that was 90 days in 2011, is that the same way that the psalmist say, how did you know that what else? The programming's Akalia was revealed to me by Sophia herself, subconscious mind,
yes.
the quantum computer. It revealed to me, it said to me, if you want to communicate with me, listen, I'm going to teach you a programming language to communicate with me with, and I'm going to show you certain things.
Mm.
And that's what happened over that 90-day period. I went in and out, and the quantum computer was showing me things and teaching me things, evolving out this whole programming language to me so fast, I was getting people, I was writing, I would write page after page after page after page after page, and I was writing a book called Secret Secrets. I must have rewrote the book at least 3 or 4 times.
Right.
Because so much information was coming. And what was happening, the first thing it revealed to me, it said that in this programming language, you're going to have 8 characters. And so in the Akalia alphabet, B-I-T,
mm-hmm.
Because remember, there's what? 8 bits make
right.
a what? A byte.
A byte. That's right.
And this is where you get megabytes, kilobytes, you know,
mm-hmm.
gigabytes. 8 bits make a byte. So
well,
the subconscious
and see, that's correlating to the physical body which that caused the cellular structure. Right.
And then the ancient Greeks, they called it what? An octode.
The octode. That's right.
Four feminine gods and four masculine gods.
That's right. The octode. That's what Akali is. That's right.
That's exactly what Akali is. So those eight characters, it revealed to me eight characters, and it said that these eight characters will form the Akali alphabet/alphabet. And each one of those characters are basic geometric shapes, like the circle, the square, the right triangle, the semicircle, and all these characters. Now, this is, and I'm going to show you how deep it is, and this is how you know it's coming from the quantum. This system was revealed to me, the bulk of it was revealed to me over a 90-day period, 3 moon cycles, right?
Right.
And there was aspects of it that I didn't realize until later that year, 2011, until next, the following year, 2012, and aspects that is still unfolding to me.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, I said, these eight characters is form the root of it, and all eight of those characters could be made with the human hand. Now, that's very important as well.
Gotcha.
Because later on, you know, the other component dealing with creating sigils, those sigils, our sigils are all created using those eight characters.
Gotcha.
Since all eight of those characters are can be done using the human hand, that lends itself to hand sigiling, which is another component.
Right.
Actually doing the sigil that you created with your hands.
Yeah, so that's just like in geometry with the Hebrew letter script of the 22 letters, how you can actually do the hand positions also.
There you go.
Right.
So you see how that old program, like, is very, Akalia is very similar, but it's the next step. Akalia is really made for the operating system of Matrix 5, but just like operating systems is what? Backwards compatible.
Right. So this is compatible as we move into the fifth dimension.
Right. That's what happened. On December 21st, 2012, at exactly 11:11 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
I launched what is known as Matrix 5 Virtual World. Now, mm-hmm. that was under direct, intense command of the ancestors.
Right.
And that's part of what... when my descendant came back in time and said, Hakeem, there's some things that you got to do, otherwise she would not exist. It was that particular thing. I didn't know until like maybe 3-4 weeks before December 21st that I had to launch that and that it was tied in with the Olmec ancestors when they said that one world will end and another world will begin that day.
That's right.
They didn't say all that stuff about earthquakes. All that stuff was the movies, you know,
right.
the movie 2012 and all the characters and all that stuff like that.
Right. Right.
They put all that in there. All the Olmec said it.
Well, I can tell you that on that particular day, I had an overabundance of energy. My wife and I stayed up, couldn't go to sleep. We couldn't even go to sleep for weeks after.
You know what happened that day? The operating system upgraded. It was like going from Windows XP to Windows 7, or from Windows 7 to Windows 8.
There was
a new operating system installed,
mm-hmm.
and that's why you're going to see the old system,
right.
the old construct of Geomatria,
mm-hmm.
is not going to have no power like it did
right.
before.
Gotcha.
And those of us who do the Akalia, we're going to realize, and we're going to have the power. Now, the eight components of Akalia, it's broken down just like a computer. These are eight things that you do to manifest your program. The first thing you got to do before you even write the program is the first component is meditation.
That's true.
Because that's where you're going to ascertain what it is you should program about. Because like the saying said, be careful what you ask for.
Right.
These programs work. And so you want to make sure that you know exactly what it is that you're going to program for, what it is that you want, and what will be the consequences of that.
Right.
You got to kind of go ahead in time and actually see yourself with that thing or in that situation, and then observe your surroundings and see how people are reacting, see exactly what are the consequences of you attaining that particular program, that program executing itself. So once you do that first initial meditation, and I created over 90 different meditations. The meditations I create are 45-minute alpha brainwaves of meditations. What was shown to me was to use the brain, and the brain waves can be entrained the same way if I fill a bathtub of water and ran my arm in a circular clockwise manner, eventually all the water will form a whirlpool and start going all in that direction. Right. That's called entraining the water. Your brain is the same way. It could be entrained as well. If you, in these meditations, I combine isochronic tones, which I'm going to get into in a minute, and I combine nature sounds, like water flowing, you know, river, you know, beach, birds, all stuff like that, and ambient music that I myself create. All right, so now going back, the isochronic tones, the tones I use are the frequencies going from 8 hertz, the alpha frequencies going from 8 hertz to 10 hertz, which involves what is called the Schumann resonance.
Right.
The Schumann resonance is 7.83 hertz, or 7.82, some say.
That's right.
And it involves the earth. And what's interesting, the Schumann resonance is actually dealing with a cavity around the earth, and the lightning around the earth is what actually creates the pulses of that frequency.
Right.
And so what I do is
I use that.
And I use that same frequency in my meditations.
Gotcha.
And so what happened with these meditations, and anybody go to the website and witness it, go to secretsequence.info. I got free 7 meditation rooms a day, free. And you can also purchase the MP3 of the meditations. I listen to them in my car.
Right.
And what's going to happen is going to entrain you into the alpha state. When you listen to these, and you close your eyes, you sit down, and you listen to these meditations in total darkness, within 10, 15 minutes, you're gonna feel it. You're gonna feel different for those who never experienced it before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gonna hit you that you're in a different state of mind. That's the alpha state. It usually will hit you within 10, 15 minutes. If you sit still, not fidgeting around, and keep your eyes closed,
right,
and just listen. All you gotta do is just listen. You will be in the alpha brain state, and that's the key state to be in. That's our programming environment. Healers, spiritual healers, when they heal people, when they test their frequency, it was always 8 hertz, that Schumann resonance.
That's right.
So this is that same frequency. All right? You're going to feel it. And so this is the time you do your programming. This is when you, in between humans, we have 4 main brain waves that we exist in. Beta, when we awake, like now, beta.
Right.
When you start to meditate, start to doze off or daydream, that's alpha.
Right, alpha.
When you sleep, when you sleep as adults, that's theta.
Theta, right.
And then when you go into deep sleep, that's called deep delta.
That's right.
When you return to the source.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is that, just like a computer, your body, like your avatar being like a computer, when you return into the deep delta, the source, your body, your physical body, your avatar goes into suspend mode, just like a laptop. Goes into suspend or hibernation mode. That's what happens with your physical body, your avatar, while you're in deep delta. Every day, every single person has to return back to the source, to deep delta. Matter of fact, you can only spend maybe 48, 72 hours in Matrix 4 in your body, your avatar. After that, you got to check out, and you have to return back to the source. That's another reason showing that this is just a simulation. This is not the ultimate reality, because if this was the ultimate reality, then how come you can only spend 72 hours in it before you got to check out? Think about that.
Mm.
You spend 72 hours in here, and you start dreaming with your eyes open. You will start returning back to the source. We go through those 4 stages every day, every night.
Okay.
Every day. When you're sleeping, you're in deep delta. Your body's in standby. Now, when you start to come back into your body, you start going through theta. When you lay at the border of theta and alpha, that's when you start dreaming. Because now your consciousness is trying to reinsert itself into the points, into your cells, into your physical avatar. So you start dreaming about the people. Notice that the dreams are comprised of the people, places, faces, and things that you see in your waking life. And so you start seeing these things. You see what I'm saying? And then once you're well integrated, then you wake up. You know, you might experience some emotion in the dream, whatever. That means you're fully connected. That's
right,
why
so that's
it's bad
like
to wake
Neo
up a child.
Downloaded.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's bad to wake up a child suddenly. Like, wake up, wake up, wake up. I, my sister, my wife, don't never wake them up like that.
Right.
Because you didn't give them a proper chance to consciousness to incubate with their body, and so their whole day is going to be off.
Mm.
If you have experienced that, when you wake up with somebody or something woke up suddenly.
Yeah, that's true.
And you didn't go back to reintegrate properly, your whole day will be off. Because you're not properly integrated into your avatar. Because of that incident, you know what I'm saying? So that's why you gotta be careful. Never, I don't even use alarm clock. You know, that's very jarring. When you, you know, your body's found its own rhythm, its own pace in terms of going from delta to theta to alpha, and then eventually to beta. It's going at its own whatever. Or it's in a clock, alarm clock, just breaking the middle of that.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think people's all messed up out here?
Right.
They just off. They just off. And because they're not even properly inserted into their bodies. You know, you talk about zombies.
Right.
You always talk about zombies these days. That's the result of your consciousness not being fully inserted into your body.
Now, check this out. Do you think that the GMOs in the food is part of that zombieism, you know, is part
mm-hmm.
of that science of being able to keep us from being able to fully integrate consciousness?
Yeah, yep. That's why you have. That's why we have to meditate. We have to. Once you come into this world, now you in the beta. The meditation is in between beta and theta.
Mm.
So imagine, like, I'm sure you've seen those hotel rooms that has two rooms adjoined by a central door.
Right.
Well, imagine now that hotel room where two rooms adjoined by this door. One room is the beta, is the conscious mind, the awakened mind. Right? The other room is the theta mind, the sleeping mind. Well, alpha is the door in between the two. That's why when you're in the alpha state, you're able to access the conscious mind, the beta, and the subconscious mind, and the theta. You're able to access both the quantum and the binary computer while in that alpha state. So that's why when we meditate, when we reach the alpha state, for those who came to Dr. Leah course, they will know exactly what to do once they reach alpha state. We began programming. For those who don't know, you know, you could alpha state, you could just, you know, relax and enjoy it. You know, but to get the most out of it, you got to know how to program. That's where the programming comes, because you right there, you at the control panel of the quantum computer, which is the subconscious mind, which is the operating system for the whole universe. Remember, this was running the source code for everything.
Right.
So when you give it a proper command, it's going to draw on everything in the universe to manifest your command.
Mm.
It has access to people, places, and things. So that's why whenever I write a program, my eyes, my ears perk up. Because the minute I run that program on the subconscious mind using Akalia, it's going to begin to mobilize people, places, and things to execute. And carry out that program, to execute that program. So also, I might, you know, this person might come up to me, and that person may be the very person sent by the subconscious mind by the heart to help to carry out my program.
Right.
So if you're not aware, you may turn away or reject, you know what I'm saying, your own program.
Mm.
So that's why I tell the students, I say, once you write the program, all right, let me go through the steps. First step, meditation, to ascertain what you want to program for. Step two is sigilization. This is where you actually write out the sigil. You actually write out what it is that you want as a statement. And that statement got to be in a certain format, just like a programming language. You know, we have a symbol that means open statement and a symbol that goes at the end of the statement that means closed statement. All right? Once you have it written out that statement form, the first thing you do, you get rid of all the vowels, then you get rid of all the vowels, and then you get rid of all the double consonants. Then from there, now, with what's left over, you construct a sigil. using the Akalia alphabet characters, you actually construct a Sigil. That Sigil now that you constructed, that's the whole program right there. It all boils down. That Sigil becomes like an icon on your desktop that you just double click. And when you double click the icon, what? The program runs, right?
Gotcha.
That's what the Sigil is.
Okay.
The Sigil, just like you use in the flyer, advertise tonight's show. That's what you see there. That's called a Sigil. That's a program. As a matter of fact, that Sigil that you use there in Akalia, Secret of Secrets, we refer to that as the Universal Sigil.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't become revealed to me till later. The Universal Sigil I put on the book of the Secret of Secrets book that I was giving away for free, and when we launched it, that Sigil was on there. I didn't find out till months later that was a Universal Sigil. Universal meaning that every program that you could write, that anyone could ever write, it has to boil down to that Sigil. It will boil down to that Sigil. As a matter of fact, and this is going to sound crazy, but those who came to course, I actually showed them how every single book on the planet Earth that ever has been written on the planet Earth could condense down into that one Sigil. Every book ever written can be compressed, compiled down into that one Universal Sigil. And I didn't find out until afterwards, but that's a fact. So that Sigil, the quantum computer, the binary computer works with words. And like you heard them say, a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Right.
A symbol, a Sigil, as shown in the Universal Sigil, is worth infinite words.
Gotcha.
So you have a picture worth 1,000 words and a Sigil worth unlimited, infinite words. And in Akalia, we have 8 components. You turn the 8 on the side, and that forms what? The symbol for infinity.
Mm-hmm.
So when we actually deal with Akalia, we're dealing with infinity. So now that was the second phase of process, sigilization. So now you created the Sigil now. Now the other part is divination. So we went from meditation to sigilization and now to meditation. And now just to give you the big picture, these 8 components, right, there's 4 masculine components and 4 feminine components. And those components can also be broken down just like computers.
Right.
You have 4 read-write components dealing with memory storage. You know, anything dealing with memory, like, for instance, like a CD-ROM, it could be read-write, RW, read-write, all right? DVD, RW, read-write. So 4 of the components are read-write components.
Gotcha.
And the other 4 components are input-output components, just like a computer. Input, you have audio in, audio out. Video in, video out. And that is the 8 components of Akalia. So now going back, meditation is the first read component. What are you doing? You are reading from the registry of Allah, also referred to as the quantum database.
Right.
You're tapping into that when you meditate. That's reading. Then sigilization is write. That's a write component because you actually write. You're writing out your statement. You compile it into a Sigil. That's a write component.
Gotcha.
Now we go over to divination, and that's another read component. You are reading from the divine. You know, all divination is they cast the cells on the ground. They cast the colonus on the ground, and they read it. That's why they call it. You going for what? A reading.
Right.
A spiritual reading. So that's a read component. Again, I'm just showing how everything is to computers, the perfect analogy. Read, write, input, output. All right, so then now, that reading, spiritual divination, in Akalia, we encourage every member to have their own personal divination system. It could be this, it could be that, it could be whatever you choose. My personal system I use is a tarot card system.
Right.
This person may choose Ifa. This person may choose whatever. The main thing is to be consistent.
Right.
And to hear and obey. All right? So whatever system you use, be consistent with it. That's your method. That's your means of reading from the divine, from the quantum computer,
gotcha.
All right, from the database.
Right, and see, what happens, too, is that most people don't realize is that it was actually Philip Emeawali, a Nigerian brother from Africa, in which that actually is the godfather, you know, of the computer system as far as the Internet.
That's right, the Internet. And then you go back even further, the whole binary system came from the divination.
Right.
What they call Sanskrit script,
right,
or sand script.
Right.
Which is what they, also known as geomancy. Geo meaning earth. And
right,
so geomancy was what? Drawn in the sand. And that's what the Dogon priests do. When they lay out the tables and they draw in the sand, that's geomancy. That's where the whole computer, the algorithms, all that came from that. But that's a whole other story. I would love to do, I got crazy research on that, which I would love to show, even showing how African villages are laid out in fractals, in fractal patterns.
Right.
But I'll say that for a whole other thing. That would be a good show right there. But anyway, coming back, so the next component from the, so remember, so now we did read, write. We did meditation. The first meeting was a meditation, read, then write. Right, when we wrote out the sigils, the sigilization, then we did another read component, which is the divination, right? Reading, spiritual reading, divination. You do your system. This is how you ascertain, you know, your you do a reading regarding your particular sigil. Like I may pick up a particular card from the tarot deck,
right,
that's going to symbolize that sigil or that program. Almost like it's a talisman, almost like it's a representation of that energy. And I do a reading about that particular card I pick, and I know everything about it because it's tied in intimately with that particular program.
Mm-hmm.
Then now the next thing is, the last write command is tarotic writing. That was the component I spoke about earlier, where you write in a journal in a specific type of way that I mentioned earlier. That's, we refer to that as tarotic writing.
Right.
And so, of course, in the words, you see the word write, writing. So
right,
we did read, write, read, write. So now we finished with the four read, write commands, components. And now we're going to go to the next four, which is input, output. So now the next four, we begin with audio in. Audio in is listening to the meditations. The 45-minute meditations, that's audio in. Just by listening to it, you know, it will automatically put you in the alpha state.
Right.
Once you reach that alpha state, we go to the next component, which is visualization. Now you begin to visualize your program as if it's a reality. So if your program was, like I mentioned earlier, for land and a house, now you're actually visualizing yourself in this house, in this home. You could smell it. You could touch the wood. You could feel the heat from the fireplace. You know, you're visualizing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's video in.
Right.
All right, so we did audio in. First, you just start off listening to the meditation. 10, 15 minutes into the meditation, once you realize you're in an alpha state, then you begin the visualization component. Visualizing that thing as being a reality. You also visualize the sigil for that program, and you also visualize the words of that program, which is constructed in the Akalia tongue. That's something else that's taught in there, where once you get the sigil down to a certain point where you have those consonants left, then we show you how to make it into words and phrases in Akalia language. That's what makes me remember. I got a journal book, a grimoire filled up with a whole bunch of different programs.
Right.
What makes me remember the programs is the phrase, the words in Akalia language for that program.
Good.
As soon as I say the words of that program, that whole program just comes up in my mind. So anyway, you reach the visualization stage. That's video in. So first you did audio in by listening to the meditation music. Once you got into the alpha state, now you go into video in, which is visualization. You visualize it within yourself, video in. The next stage is video out. audio out. When you verbalize, you vocalize the words to your sigil. All right? And you see some things like when you go see some of the meditation on the Secret of Secrets website, secretofsecrets.info, you'll see some of the names of the meditations is in Akalia language. Like one of them was Sapa Manogo Ha. That means, in English, that would mean spring is here. But in Akalia language, the name of that particular meditation is Sapa Manogo Ha. All right, just to give you an example of the Akalia language. So when I get to that part, that stage right there, audio out, I begin to verbalize the actual what is Sapa Manogo Ha. I actually begin to say it verbally, and then while I'm saying it, I do the next component, which is video out. And in the video out, I'm actually going through the axis like dramatization, and I'm actually dramatizing the sigil through the hand sigiling. Mm. And so in the course, I show exactly how to hand sigil. In the course, I hand sigiled the universal sigil.
Right.
Now, so those are the steps there, and we just keep going around and around. Now, the universal sigil, we recommend that members, even if they create their own sigil, to still render their program in the universal sigil as well. Why? The universal sigil is the ultimate in masterminding. I came out with a line of clothes called Sigil Gear. And those line of clothes, right, they have the sigils on the shirts, on the watches, on the hats and everything. Why? Because every time somebody sees that sigil, they run that program.
Gotcha.
This is why corporations use logos and so really sigils, because they know that every time somebody sees it, they empower that program.
Yep.
And so with the universal sigil, imagine if you broke down your program into the universal sigil. Every time I wear my shirt, my Sigil Gear shirt, or, you know, people did all kinds of things. Some people carved it in their gardens. Some put the sigils in their gardens. Some people put the sigils on their books, like notebooks or whatever. All kinds of things people did with the sigils. Some people put it on transparent labels on water to change the water, like, you know, like that other Japanese experiment. If you put your sigil and compile it down to a universal sigil, every time somebody sees me wearing that universal sigil shirt, they're not only just running my program, they're running your program as well.
Gotcha.
And every other member who compiled their program down to the universal sigil. So that's why masterminding is two or more minds being combined for a common cause.
Gotcha.
Or like Napoleon Hill said, and think and go rich. Right, you know, five minds getting together and empowering each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we mastermind just by putting our programs through universal sigil.
Right.
You
so want
to make
like,
spot, you want to see, you want to see everywhere.
Right, so that's like the 100 monkey theory, or the one monkey,
mm-hmm.
You know, right, exactly. Gotcha.
It's like a chain reaction. And so
right.
You see now people, somebody once said to me, they said, well, Hakeem, when somebody sees you with the sigil shirt, and they look at it, because people always stare at my sigil shirts when I wear it. They always look at it, they always ask me, like, what's that? And it's a secret, the sigil's below, so they're all curious now. They're like, what is that? They're staring at it, right? They crazy running, not only my program, but everybody's program, right? And so, you know, they naturally think, like, you know, what is that dealing with? But that is the ultimate mastermind, because it's running everybody. It's giving strength and power to everybody's program. And so you're going to see all through our Matrix 5 universal sigils everywhere.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? It's everywhere out there, you know. And so people are constantly going to see it. And that's when people come into Matrix 5 virtual world, there's different layers of it. You know, there's a layer that the average person's going to come in and they can still have a good time, you know, in the movie theaters we got. And I want to mention too, Brother Dr. Lima, I want to get you in there. I want to secure with your own classroom so you can get classes in there.
Okay.
You know, we have, inside the virtual world,
right.
We have 4 shopping malls, we have 32 stores, we have office space, We have four movie theater buildings. Each building has six cinema theaters inside of it. We have four learning centers, and each learning center has six or more classrooms in it. We have art parks and art museums with exhibit space. We have a beach and boardwalk. We have an undersea adventure world where you actually go undersea, under the water, and at the bottom of the water is a whole facility down there with classrooms and everything. We have two wooded parks that you could just sit out there in nature, and there's even nature music playing in the background. And we have 60 homes in Matrix Fire. And right. You should see the way some of the members are decorating their homes. I mean, some of us put in loft space in our homes, and we got some of the members got pyramids on their homes. I mean, all kinds of stuff, you know. And the way it's designed says that your home is your home. When you log in to Matrix Fire, it's like you literally wake up in your home. And then you could walk out your home. You could go check out a movie. You could go to a class. You could go check out. We got open mic stands out there. All kinds of things we're going to have. We're going to officially launch it to the general public on March 21st, on spring. We launched it December 21st, 2012, at 11:11.
Mm-hmm.
This was part of the new world that the Olmec ancestors seen, because in Matrix 5, when you enter into your avatar Matrix 5, you could decorate your avatar however you want. You can make your avatar look just like you.
Right.
We got clothesline. I created about a clothesline of about 24 different outfits. We got other members in there creating different lines of clothes for the avatar. Fezzes, everything we got in there for the avatars. And then your app, when you in Matrix 5, you could fly. And you could swim underwater.
Mm.
And so the members just love to fly. Everybody loves the flying part. It's right. Like, and also you could teleport. You can instantaneously teleport from one part of Matrix 5 to a whole other region instantaneously, you know. And so that's cool, too. You know, we have two meditation rooms in the clouds, and it's hundreds of feet up in the sky. The only way you can access those meditation rooms is by either flying or teleporting there.
Right.
You know, so it's a crazy deep experience. Everybody loves it who comes in there. I mean,
right.
I even brought my mother. Matter of fact, Ben Botter came in there the other day.
Right.
You know,
everything that you're telling me reminds me of, like, the movie Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Like that too, just like
right.
that. This is a virtual world. This is leading to. And this is what the prophet referred to as the plane of soul.
Mm.
Now, remember, the prophet said that first we came from spirit,
right.
Then the ether vibrated slower, and then that took us to the plane of soul, where the essence of everything lies, the perfumes and the smells. And then as it vibrated even deeper, that led to the physical, carnal world of things made manifest. He said, but then we will have to go through many things in the flesh, in the carnal flesh, in the plane of things may manifest. He said, but eventually we will be victorious and overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And the carnal flesh would have served its purpose and will be
right.
needed no more.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will return back to the plane of soul, where we had to overcome certain things there on the plane of soul before eventually fully unfolding into spirit man. And so the virtual world represents the plane of soul.
Gotcha.
We don't have carnal fleshy bodies on the plane of soul in Matrix 5. Our avatars can last forever. They eternal. They don't
gotcha.
Suffer illness. They don't suffer cuts and bruises and injuries and loss of limb and things of that nature.
Right.
This is the plane of soul that we're navigating on. Now, just to show you how deep this plane is and that how deep this virtual world is, the world we exist in right now, this physical world, has four dimensions, right? It has length, width, height. Those are the three dimensions, what we call 3D, length,
right.
width, and height,
right.
right? And then it has a fourth dimension, which is time,
mm-hmm.
all right? All these dimensions intersect each other at 90-degree angles. All right, length and width, 90-degree angle, height and length, and all that 90 degrees. So the question is, what is the next 90-degree angle that all I could branch off into to be considered the fifth dimension?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in actuality, Matrix 5 virtual world, the virtual realm, is the fifth dimension
gotcha.
that things could branch out into. And now when it branches out into the fifth dimension, it has another four dimensions, because within that fifth dimension is another four dimensions. So within Matrix 5, we have length, we have width and height. It's like every object, you know, those who come in who learn, every object has an x-axis, a y-axis, and a z-axis, which is length, width, and height. We also have time in there. You could actually modify time inside there. I could make the time ratio in Matrix 5 a 1-to-1 ratio, which means I can make so that when it's 9 p.m. Eastern time out here, it's 9 p.m. Eastern time in there.
Gotcha.
When the sunrise out here, I can make it so that the sunrise in there. I can speed up time in there. I can make it a 4-to-1 ratio. I can make it so that when every time an hour pass out here, 4 hours pass and make it 5. So I can make it go through 4 days. Every time we go through 1 24-hour day, I can make Matrix 5 go through 4 days.
Gotcha.
All right. Now you, yourself, when you come in with your avatar, you can modify time too. You can come in. I keep Matrix 5 so it's always like it's daytime, like it's afternoon.
Right.
But you could come in and you could change it so that it's 9 p.m. at night. Let's say it's 9 p.m. where you at. You want to reflect where it is where you at. You can make it so that for you personally, it's 9 p.m. Everybody else is going to see whatever they got it set at.
Right.
You can keep it on the default setting, or you could set what time of day it is. Therefore, you got control over time. And so that's an additional four dimensions. So those who know Akali, when I taught the first course, I taught them how to program in four dimensions out here in Matrix 4.
Right.
Now I'm teaching how to program in an additional four dimensions. So all together, those of us in Akali, we programming now in eight dimensions.
Mm.
The four dimensions from here,
right,
and the fifth dimension, which is the virtual world, which itself breaks up into additional four dimensions. So that's eight altogether. They were at number eight again. Akalia. Like octopus. Even the name Akalia is made from the characters themselves, the eight characters. The eight characters formed the word Akalia. That's the word. I got the name Akalia for the system from the system itself. Like I said, this whole system was from the subconscious mind. The quantum computer itself showed me and said, if you want to communicate with me, here's the programming language. This is how you communicate with me. And the eight characters it gave me, when I put them together a certain way, they formed the word Akaluna. And so the name itself came from the alphabet. And the word Akaluna, 8 bits form a byte. And so the word Akaluna, it was a byte, B-Y-T-E. And so it all ties in right in with the computer. Everything fits in lock and key because it's coming from the quantum. Remember, your subconscious mind, the quantum, is the foundation, is the operating system for the whole universe. It's the ultimate in multitasking. Just look at yourself. When you wake up in the morning, you don't tell your heart, beat, 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 beat. You don't tell your lungs, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Well, that's controlled by the autonomic nervous system under the subconscious.
That's right.
So here you have this quantum computer. It's not only controlling all that. It's controlling homeostasis. It's controlling the balance of acid and alkaline in your body. It's controlling your breathing. When you walk down the block, if only we knew the amount of calculations, physical calculations that got to be made just to walk down the block. You're not constantly doing that. Your conscious mind's not handling that. The binary's not handling that. That means it's got to be handled by a quantum computer. Only a quantum computer can handle that many tasks at one time. And then not only for you personally, but for every living thing in the universe, that's quantum.
Got you.
That's quantum.
Got you.
Hold
on, Brother Hakeem. We're going to go to the phone line because I know they got questions because we've been going for an hour and a half here. Hold on.
All right.
Let me pull them in. We're going to go to area code 512. Area code 512, you on the line.
Peace.
Greetings.
You might have stepped away.
Peace. 512, area code, you on the line. Okay, I'm going to step away. We're going to go to area code 314. Area code 314, you're on the line.
Peace, God.
Peace, God. How you doing tonight, Brother
L? I'm doing well, Brother Arlene.
All right. Professor, what you got for us tonight? You got some questions for Brother Hakeem?
Yes, sir. Brother, I was listening to what he was saying earlier about the sovereigns and the subjects.
Yes,
and how the sovereigns were mainly the few.
Right.
I experienced something last night of what he was talking about. And when I went to a court date with this brother, and I went inside the courtroom. Well, I had to check you for everything, and I had my fez on, of course. And a lot of the police officers, so certain police officers in there, they said, "Well, you have to take your hat off." And I said, "Well, no, because I didn't have to raise my voice or anything. I just said, no, this is my fez. This is the religious headdress of my religion." I went to another spot where they had to check me. They said, "Sir, you got to take your hat off." I said, "No, this is not a hat. This is a fez. This is a headdress of my religion."
Sure.
But I didn't have to raise my voice. I just said it. All I had to do was say it one time. And I think they let me, okay, we let you through. When you get in the courtroom, we'll let the judge deal with it. I said, okay. But I never did get a chance to get in the courtroom. But it was just the idea. I didn't have to argue, raise my voice or anything, because it, like you were just saying, I knew that they didn't have any real power.
Right.
You know,
and that's the truth. You
were
lying. You use like something that they, you know, it that just shows you the power that we don't realize that we have. I got a clip I downloaded from YouTube the other day. And it showed two brothers who chased a pack of 15 lions, including a male lion, off a carcass of an antelope. And they actually chased them off and took the meat. I broke out when I seen that. But they did, and the whole thing behind it was that they prepped up and they was crouching down. And the lions, the 15 lions, were all around the carcass, eating the carcass. At a certain point in time, they both stood up at the exact same time and began to walk fearlessly towards the 15 lions.
Mm-hmm.
The 15 lions is saying, in their mind, saying, "What is this creature that dare walk towards us 15 lions seriously like this? This kid must have something." And they all scrambled. They just ran.
Mm-hmm.
The two brothers went there, took what they wanted, and just stepped off. And so that just shows you, and the whole thing is to maintain fear. Then I seen another clip that showed two bushmen from South Africa, the Sand People, and a cheetah had took their kill that they had hunted down. And they went up with their bows and just banged their bows on the ground, ran those two cheetahs off, and the two cheetahs didn't just run off. They didn't want to give up that kill. They was trying to fight back. But the whole key, the man said, was not to show 1 ounce of fear. If they would have shown 1 ounce of fear, they would have been devoured.
Right.
They had to chase them things off and show not one drop of fear, and then those things just backed out. They fell back.
Right.
So even amongst the most ferocious animals on earth, we have a certain energy, and when we maintain it, when we know we're the sovereign, everything backs down. Everything submits.
That's so true. That's so true, Brother Hakeem. And like I really felt real relaxed. I felt real relaxed. You know, and it's like, all these armed police guards and security guards, you know, with tasers and sidearms. And all I got is just, you know, me, you know.
Because you've been your true self. You be your true self.
Yes, sir.
Your true sovereign. Your true sovereign. And that's the bottom line. And they know, too, you said the key words. You said, "This is my religious headdress." As soon as you said that, even with the little training I have, they know that a violation of freedom of religion, that's a major lawsuit.
That's
nobody
right.
wants a violation of a freedom of religion lawsuit in their hand. So that's why the prophet constantly kept talking about religious freedom. There was one section in the Moorish literature, one article, where he said religious freedom like 4 or 5 times on that same page. As if he was trying to drill into us the whole key, religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That's the line they can't cross. That's why the first scene in the United States showed Moses and his people standing on the Rock of Salvation on the left side of the dollar bill, where it has a pyramid of the eye, and on the right side, it showed Pharaoh and his armies trying to pursue them. And in the middle, it showed them being devoured by the Red Sea. The Red Sea is the separation of church and state.
Uh-huh.
That's the line. That's the Red Sea that the Pharaoh represents the national government cannot cross.
Uh-huh.
That's why you got the two seals. That's why the original seals showed that exact scene. I got that in the 13th book or the Journal of Morse Paradigm. I got an exact picture of that first seal showing that. And that's what I talked about the prophet and why the prophet was saying, get yourself. So when you told them, this is my religious headdress, they knew that was a line they didn't want to cross. My son was in the hospital one time, and I submitted paperwork with the seal on it saying that, you know, that on our religious freedom, you cannot give them any medicine, any procedure, whatever, without our explicit permission. Do you know that they gave that document so much respect that every time they wanted to make a move, one time the doctors came to me and said, he said, Mr. Day, we need to give him some medicine. Is it all right with you? And I read the information and everything, and I told them yes. And they looked back at me again. They said, you sure it's all right? But we do want conflict with what you put in that paper that you submitted? They want to make sure because if they violate your religious freedom, they will be subject to a lawsuit for violation of religious freedom.
That's right.
And no hospital, no institution wants that. So they tell people, look, don't cross that line. You know, the one time there was a brother who they tried to snatch up his children. They said because he was fake feeding him a vegetarian diet, this and that, and you know, like, you know, they got a special service for two, as if like, you know, like he was like starving his kid type of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like we gotta take your children for him. And he started to try and fight it from one angle. I said, but all you had to do was tell him that, submit an affidavit saying that this child is living a way of life under our religious freedom. And they would lift us alone. But it was something that he said, he started trying to prove how the vegetarian diet is a good and valid diet. Right there, you messed up. Because right there, they could fight back and forth saying, yes, it's right. Yes, what you're saying is right. But yes, what you're saying is wrong. But when you come up with religious freedom, no, according to law, they cannot judge the validity of your religious right and say, oh, that's good or that's bad. They have no jurisdiction in that. They just can't leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So religious freedom is the key. And I just wanted to point it out in terms of that was the key to what you said. That's why they had to step back. They had to. Peace.
Well, yeah, Brother Hakeem, I got a question myself, in which I've been meaning to ask you for almost 8 years now. Seven, 8 years. I remember when you was on Coast to Coast, and all of a sudden it just went out.
Yeah. You know, 8 years ago when I was on our Bell show, Coast to Coast AM.
Right.
You know what happened? One day I just seen, you know, they used to put on the website, you know, looking for guests, whatever.
Right.
And I seen it before, but one day the divine said, Hakeem, go ahead and apply for it.
Yeah, go ahead.
And sending the thing to them out of the blue. I didn't think at the time really that it was going to end up come of it. But I know 2 weeks later, they calling me from our Bell show.
Right.
And they like, you know, we interested in having you on as a guest. And she started the interview, talked to me, and I was telling her about Atlantis and this and that. And she was like, she's like fascinating. She's like, we can't wait to get you on as a guest, right? And you know how George Norrie was talking about, yeah, I love Atlantis. Anything to do with Atlantis, right? All right, yeah, all right, we'll see, right?
Right.
So I knew I was going to be on, and I knew that I was going to get a crazy rush. Because remember, you think millions of listeners. I knew I was going to get a crazy rush for the books, so the Journal of Morse Paradigm books. I said, no way I'm going to be, because I was publishing myself in my house. I said, no way I'm going to be able to handle the rush. I said, so you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put all of them in ebook format. So the minute they order them, they'll be able to get an instant download. I ain't got to ship out none of that stuff like that, right?
That's right.
I did that, and then I put together a slideshow of over 100 slides that I was going to show during the radio show, because I didn't want to say things. You know, I remember, like I said, I like to actually show people. the documents, the treaties. I had it all lined up on a slideshow over. So I sent it to them, and they put the link and everything. But I guess when George Norrie seen that, seen all my old materials and all that stuff like that,
right?
He said, "Oh man!" So from that point on, they tried to sabotage the show. So here come time for the show. They call me, and all of a sudden it's all static. They can't hear me.
Right.
And I told, and it was the audio engineer. I forgot his name. He's the one who actually sabotaged the show through the audio, because I got called, and it was all staticky and crazy. And I could say to him, let me hang up and call you back, because this is going to be crazy. I can't hear you. He kept saying, no. He said, everything's on clip right before the show. Don't worry. I kept saying, man, I think I need to call back. He's like, no, stay on. So sure enough, the show starts, and everything's staticky. I could barely hear him. George Norrie could barely hear me. And then they're like, all right, we can barely hear this and that, right? So then when they go to the intermission break, I didn't wait to ask him no more. I hung up the phone and called back. And when I called back, the line was crystal clear. So I said, good. I said, let's go with the show. The sound engineer goes, no, I'm going to have to make a call. We can't continue on with the show. I said, why not? I said, I'm talking to you right now. Everything's clear. He said, yeah, but I don't know if it's going to break down again. I'm like, what? He said, yeah, George wanted to reschedule with you. I'm like, oh, man. Here goes the game. Right. So then I'm still trying. I said, listen, I'm clear with you right now. And then he said, I got to go. So then I start. And then he hangs up. And that's when George Norrie come back on and say, sorry, but we couldn't hear the other guests, so we're going to go to the guest door thing, or some secret guest going to come in or whatever.
Right,
some craziness, man. And so I was pissed. And a lot of people emailed, they was pissed at what happened. They was like, this was going to be one of the most interesting shows in a long time, and George Norrie cut the show off.
That's right.
I was listening.
Yeah. Because my father-in-law, bro, Hakeem is going to be on Coast to Coast. I'm like, what?
I couldn't believe it, man. You know what I'm saying? I was about to go in on them, Aline.
I know.
100 slide video.
Man, we were sitting there in front of the radio like it was TV.
Man, I was ready to go in, man. I was so upset behind that. So then it said, George Norrie wanted to schedule with you, right? They said, the secretary going to give you a call, right? So then, like, a couple of days later, the secretary gave me a call. I called the secretary, and she said, oh, George Norrie said he's not interested. So he didn't even want to reschedule. Man, they got so scared, man. He's a punk. He's a little something, man. He just got scared, man. He got so scared, man. He got another talking about, I love Atlantis, anything that deal with Atlantis.
Right.
Man. But anyway, you know how that go. You know what I'm saying? I said, all right, you know, whatever.
Right. Well, we got area code 732. Area code 732, you on the line. Peace.
Peace.
Area code, peace. How you doing?
Peace.
He might be listening to the
delay. Oh, peace, God. Brother,
this is
B. Novel. How you doing?
All right. Peace, brother.
Peace. Just question for Hakeem, just real quick. I need you to repeat the site where I can get the Paradigms.
Oh, all right. I'm going to give you both sites. The Paradigms, you go to allthingsonearth.com/JMP. That's J as in journal, M as in Morris, P as in paradigm. Once again, that's allthingsonearth.com/JMP. And I have a special one there where you get all 13 journals for less than half price. So I would advise take advantage of that special. And those journals is information that I won't believe. Those journals are so heavily copied and bootlegged and plagiarized that you may have seen copies, copy and paste of it on different websites. I see it all over the place.
And people don't
even get credit, where they got it from. But I've seen whole pages of my journal lifted and posted on websites.
Yeah.
So I'm telling y'all, y'all might as well go to the source. Mm-hmm. You know, this goes back, the drugs go back to 1995.
That's right.
You know, so right. He was doing this, y'all. He was doing this going back like 20 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of people jumping on the Moore's bandwagon now, but New Atlantis, new-atlantis.com, the website I had back then,
that's
that was
right.
The first Moore's website on the internet.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
first
sure
Moore's
was.
Website on the World Wide Web.
That's right.
And the information we was putting out back then, going back in 92, you know, way back then we was, you know, publishing over 100 different Moore's pamphlets and books and all kinds of stuff. So that might as well, you know, get it right from the source. There's stuff in there that, you know, you won't find too many places in detail. And like, everything is documented, the exact book, page number, everything.
Right.
You know, at that time when I was writing this book, I had access to all kinds of libraries, including Jesuit libraries. Masonic libraries.
Mm-hmm.
So I was getting crazy jewels. I was getting jewels like left and right. I would actually pull up in the Jesuit library and snatch up a whole room for myself, like a personal, like my own personal office, sitting there with a scanner, scanning
right.
everything.
Mm. Right. I remember one time you was talking about one of the one of the janitors invited, you know, let you into one of the rooms,
yeah.
libraries, and.
Yeah,
right.
The security guard.
Right.
What I did to get into the Jesuit library, what I did was I made friends with the security guard at the gate.
Right.
And then on the strength of that security guard and that security guard's name, I ran to another security guard, and she was like the head honcho supervisor or something like that. So once me and her hit it off, it was cool. What I had to do was mention her name anywhere in that institution I was in. So I got to the point where I was going there on a daily basis. I was in. I would snatch up a whole reading room, you know, set up my whole laptop, scanner, everything, like it was my office. And
right.
the original stuff.
Right.
I was scanning doctors that were so old and brittle that I put on a scanner. I lifted up the scanner, all this powder, it just turned to powder.
Mm.
You know, it was stuff like that. You know, so there are jewels inside those journals. I mean, I get into some crazy deep stuff, but those journals are also tools in the hands of Moore's teachers. So as you teaching brothers and sisters, you gotta say, don't take my word for it. Here's the exact document. Here's the treaty. I got the exact treaties in there. I got George Washington's handwritten hand letter to the Emperor of Morocco. The whole letter's in there.
Right,
The 13th book. I got the secret proceedings of Congress. In 1792, when it locked everybody out of Congress, why was it secret proceeding? Because it was talking about the tribute that they were still paying to the Moors.
Right.
I got the actual congressional record. We were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the actual documents in there. I got the actual picture of Sidi Muhammad, who signed the Moroccan Treaty.
Mm-hmm.
I got his actual picture in there. So we wasn't playing, you know, the journals was no joke.
That's right.
The journals was no joke. I mean, I would, you know, the ancestors had me in their grip with them journals. I walk into the library, I'm already in a trash state. I'm like, what? I'm already in a trash state. I could have walked to any bookshelf, just blindly grab the book, and they had stuff on the Moors in it. It got to that point. I walked into libraries and just closed my eyes and just went and just grabbed any book, and it was stuff on the Moors. And that's when I started to say, am I studying history or am I writing history?
Exactly.
And it was a little bit of both.
It
was stuff that I know did not exist prior to that research.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started, I couldn't even hardly find anything with elders. The Moore's elders, they just told us stuff. They just said X, Y, Z. They didn't provide no proof, no substantiation. It was like when the Moore's elders taught us up in New York, it was like they gave us the answer to the equation.
Right.
Now we had to go work out the equation to find how they arrived at that answer.
Yep. That's right.
So that's what the research was reworking the equation. They just said the Moore's this, that. I had to go through the research, because I don't take nothing on face value.
Right.
Even though I love the elders, when they told me stuff, I would say, like, that's you, that's us more saying that, but show me some other source that's saying this.
That's
you
right.
know? And so I would go into the libraries, and I would do that research. And at first it was hard. I couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually it got to the point where, like I said, I could walk to the library blindfolded, grab a book, and they just have stuff on the Moors.
Got you.
You know, right. So them journals encapsulate after years and over 15,000 hours of research in those journals. So check it, you know, because it's deep. And right now, like I said, I got a special right now, less than half price, because I just want to get into people's hands so they can begin to teach their children. I had College University contact me saying that they're integrating that into their universities. I even one time I had a museum from Bulgaria contact me saying that they're going to put it in their museum. Bulgaria.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So this is real. China, people from China, all the military bases, you know, I mean, the persons who were on duty in the military, they used to be ordering it. They used to form study groups and be ordering it. It was on ships, everything. I see the prisoners, forget about it.
Right.
Oh, forget about it. I couldn't even keep up. Every time ships were going to the prisoners, I would get so many letters, stacks of them. I couldn't even keep up with the letters. The stack was eventually taller than me.
Yeah.
I'm 60-something, you know what I'm saying? So it was like that. The prisoners, forget it, they got it locked. I met so many brothers and sisters who got out afterwards. I said, man, this stuff was all over the prisons. They got gangs, the Moabites in this city that follows, the whole gang prison follows
right.
it. You know what
right.
I'm saying? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it spread. And this is the source. This is the source of a lot of brothers who became Moors behind
right.
these journals. These journals actually...
Mm-hmm.
For thousands and thousands mm-hmm. of Moors across the country.
Yeah, it did. I mean, because I got introduced to you by way of cultural communications in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah. But Emiola, though.
Right,
yep.
right. Brother Emiola, Sister Emiola, Brother Emiola and Sister Uma. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and
yep.
so, you know, that's how I got introduced to you was through them. You know, because I used to go in and get the DVDs. You know, rent the DVDs and take, you know, well, there was tapes at that time, you know, take them, you know, and look at them, you know, and I mean.
We was also talking about that time. I remember seeing Bobby Hummett in the audience for some of the lecture I did in Atlanta.
Yep,
you know,
it was.
When y'all see that lecture on YouTube,
that's right.
What they never taught
what
you
they never
in history
taught
class.
You history class, that's right.
Right. He was back in the audience. Y'all
sure
actually
was.
See Bobby Hummett.
Yep.
You know, he confirmed everything. That's one of the reasons why Bobby Hunter got deeply into the Moors thing at that time. He told
right.
he messed him. Matter of fact, Bobby, when I was on West 21st Street, when I used to bend in Harlem, I used to have five tables full of books on 121st Street right across from the Apollo Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody used to come by. I remember Bobby Hunter came by. They just blew his mind. He's like, this brother got it. This brother got those. Look at the books this brother got. And, every day for like the next week or so, when I came to my spot, Bobby Hummett was there waiting for me. He would get the conversation
wow.
and he was there every day. He was there before I got there to
right.
scout.
Right.
You know, and so we all started about around that time. That's when I had opened up for Double Blair.
Right.
And Bobby started lecturing. We really started about around that same time.
Right, around 92, 93, you know, right?
94, yeah, 93, 94, Brooklyn Community College,
mm-hmm.
Double all that, yeah, right around mm-hmm. that time. But see, that was the Renaissance War, 92.
Right.
Remember now, the last of the wars and when the tables turned was when the Moors fell in Granada, Spain, 1492.
1492,
1492
years later.
Yeah, 500 years,
that's
what
right.
the Phoenix Bird cycle.
Mm-hmm.
They said that what? We will rise from our own ashes.
Right,
like
the
Phoenix in the 500.
Yeah.
That was it, 92.
Columbus up for 500 years.
92, man. That's
right.
what see, when we, 92, when we started, when we came out there on 121st Street, us younger generation, the new Moors, when we came
mm-hmm.
out there with our feathers and turbans, it fulfilled the Phoenixburg prophecy and the prophet's prophecy who said that they will come new Moors. Who would come in with their eyes wide open,
mm-hmm.
seeing and knowing, and that they would take the old Moors, put them in the back, and they would carry out my law.
Right.
We represented those new Moors.
Right.
And in 1992, when we was out there, I remember brothers who come to Harlem from all over the country, and they see all these President Turbans on my table. They used to be like, you know, who we are? What y'all into? What's this all about? And so from there, I always say it's like the epicenter. It's like when you drop a rock into the pool, a body of water, and you see the circles go out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what 121st Street in Harlem, which we refer to as Mecca.
It's Mecca.
Like East Borough
right.
had its name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Manhattan was Mecca.
Right.
Bronx was Pilon or Patmos.
Right.
Queens was the desert. Right. And Brooklyn was Medina.
Medina, right.
And Staten Island was Stalin.
Right, right.
And so Manhattan was Mecca.
Right.
And that's where that stone was dropped. And believe me, from that time, 1992, that's when I got with the Gray Seal. And then eventually they made me the Wazir Tlaib, Minister of Education for the Moors in New York City. What happened at that time, and my course that I gave on the Moors, we had businesses coming from every aspect of the movement, Hebrew Israelites, Five Percenters, Nation of Islam, Garveyites, you name it, and they was Rasta. They was all coming through that course
right.
to gain their Moorish nationality,
mm-hmm.
no matter what perspective they came from, and it just swept the city. Next thing I know, the whole country, we was like, it, and up to that time, you only had a handful of older Moors in the temples. Up until that time, 92, around that time. If
right.
you would have went to the communities, 9 of every 10 brothers and sisters, they wouldn't even know who the Pooty Prophet and Uduwali was at that time.
You're right.
So it was for us to come up, the new Moors, and so we had a whole different approach. We started to a whole other level. From
right.
the time we came up in 92, we started publishing.
Right.
We were publishing $5 pamphlets.
Mm-hmm.
Over 120 different $5 pamphlets. Brothers were coming in, was eating them. Matter of fact, the pamphlets was originally $3, $4, $5, like a $3, $4, $5 right triangle.
Right.
That's the reason why I priced them $3, $4, $5.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I came up with the first Moore's Compendium 1 and Moore's Compendium 2. And brothers and sisters ate that thing up, man.
Right.
So it's just,
wow.
it's really been just history from that time. From
that's
that
right.
time, it's just been. History.
Mm-hmm, you're right. There's no doubt about it. Because I know Dr. York, who was known as Imam Issa at the time, he did a book, who is Noble Dr. Ali. And
mm-hmm.
that book is
mm-hmm.
One of the books on which that, and I think it was around 88, 89, is you know, basically is what, you know, opened back up the, you know, the MSTA and different other, you know, Moorish, you know, groups, you know, basically, you know. In
I remember that time. And I remember
mm-hmm.
You know, at that time, when I first began operating as the Wazir Tlaib, you know, dealing with that, you know, at first, I my Issa Bush, we referred to him at that time, Dr. York, he was somewhat against some of the things I was saying. Like,
right.
some people showed me some things, they said, yeah, he said, you know, that Baba King, saying we Moors, and this and that, or whatever, you
right.
know. But I knew at that point, I had his ear.
Right, right.
And what happened was that,
by the
mid-90s, that summer,
that's right.
They sent a contingent to my house that came
right.
to the course.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling another brother, I said, watch. I said, it's just a matter of time before they came become Moors, right?
Right.
So that new year, we seen a picture, and they all had feathers on at the celebration. I said, watch. I said, I'm telling you, brother, watch. And just sure enough, they all declared themselves New Albion Moors.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, everybody was getting with the Moors at that time because the Moors thing was just like, they just mushroomed.
The Renaissance.
Yeah, because we went through the Afrocentricity,
mm-hmm.
right, in New York City. Like, I came up with Afrocentricity. You know, I studied at the feet of Dr. Ben,
right.
Dr. Clark.
And then,
matter
yep.
of fact,
I haven't gone through
the
that's right.
Even before I got heavy into the Moors, there was a lecture. Y'all will see this lecture with John Henry Clark in Brooklyn. We actually stand up in the audience because John Henry Clark used to, you know, really come down hard on
right.
Muslims or Muslims and
that's
African
right.
like that. So I actually stood up in the audience. I said, well, what about the Moors? And this is before I was even, this is, I'm talking about, this is way back.
Right.
And I was young at that time. And then Dr. Clark started talking positively about the Moors, though. You know,
right.
even though he was some negative things or whatever. But anyway, I thought it was just ironic that I happened to stand up at that time and ask him about the Moors. Because I was always the type, like, when I took a class, I'd get into it. When I took class with Dr. Ben, you know, I was the type in there. I was always raising my hand, asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
Serious questions.
That's right.
You know, Dr. Clark or whatever, because I was seriously studying what they were saying. So we all came up with that. And Afrocentricity took off in New York City. When I first started selling books in New York, it was mainly Afrocentric material.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of, I was one of the ones partially responsible for all those book dealers you see out there in the streets now.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always like that.
Right.
What happened was that before I started street vending, I graduated from college with my bachelor's in 88, and right before I graduated, I did a research paper on street vending in New York City.
Right.
I did it on purpose because I wanted to street vend. but I know how to learn all the laws. So I said, I'm going to do a research paper and get school college credit for that and find out. And that what I did, I found out they had all these crazy laws in New York City about getting a gun's license. You know, you had to almost like be a veteran, even just get on a list. So, but I found out that if you sold books, you was exempt
right.
from those laws.
Right.
And so I got that document, that piece of paper. I went out there and went to the streets for selling books. They came out there, the police came out there with the paddy wagon, snatching up all the vendors' stuff.
Wow.
Illegally vending, right? They got to me, and the cop said, pack up. I said, pardon me? I said, according to this, I'm exempt from that. I pulled it out on a clipboard. I showed it to him, boom, 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 broke it down. And he had just like this crazy puzzled look on his face. He didn't know what to say, right? And all the vendors were looking, right? So then he said, well, your stand is too big. You got too many tables. I said, up. I said, nope, according to this, as long as there's not a butt on the curb, it could be by 15 feet, da 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 da. And then he just like turned red and he just had to walk away. And all the vendors came up to me. It was like, yo, what's that people you showing? What you doing with, man? You know, they was bugging, right. They was bugging out, right? So then one of the major book dealers in the city at that time, Lucina and A&B Books, they was putting a whole bunch of vendors out there.
Right.
And I actually gave them the paperwork, that paperwork to give to the vendors so they won't have problems.
That's right.
And then you just see vendors all over the place, even the Africans, everybody was all over the place in New York selling books now.
That's right.
You know, so you know, it's just you know, it's a lot of history. A lot of we got a lot of history under our belt. I mean, going back, this goes. I've been doing this going back to 81.
Right.
So we talking about 32 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got businesses who in the movement who just 32 years old themselves. You know, forget we in the movement 32 years.
That's true.
You know, so in this movement, and you dealing with our people. You have to pace yourself.
Right.
I've seen people burn themselves out. I've seen scholars, you know, pass away, you know, near brokenhearted.
Yeah.
I never forget when Burr Shango passed.
Yeah.
And I seen him in Philly. At
January,
his lecture in Philly.
January the 14th, 2004.
Yes.
Yeah.
I seen it, and he was right there, and I seen in his face, and I heard in his voice the
mm-hmm.
pain and the things that he went through.
Right.
Doing things for us and how.
Me, months before he passed, he was at my house.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh man, it's you know, it was sad. So it showed me that in this movement, in a lot of people, you gotta think of it and you gotta understand it as a marathon.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to pace yourself. The race is not to the swiftest, but to he who can endure.
Yeah.
And without people, it's like breathing. You can't just be out there electing, and just burn yourself out, burn them out.
Right.
You know, to me, it's like breathing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll come out, I'll lecture, I'll be out there for a while, and then I'll step back.
Right.
I'll go into the woods, I'll meditate, I'll go introspectively within myself, because once you empty your cup, then you got to go within to fill your cup back up so you have something to give to people.
That's right.
Right.
Well, I
you
do
know
this, but my team is that we need to do a lecture. And whatever you want to do it on, we need to get that going. There's no doubt about that.
I'm down for whatever, man. I'm definitely down because that's what I love doing. I love opening up minds, and I love seeing, like, I love raising the dead, basically.
Well, I should say workshop.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would love to, man, on so many different things. I mean, I would love to do another show with you, getting deep into the Matrix 5,
right.
And that whole thing, as we evolve it out, it's still unfolding now. But in the meantime, those who enter, let me give you the website address too. The first one, allthingsonearth.com/JMP, J as in journal, M as in Morris, P as in paradigm. The other website is secretofsecrets.info. Secretofsecrets.info. And that's where you get the information. You get the Secrets book, but I think it's like only $2 or something like that. It was free, but when we put it on Amazon.com, they told us we had to take down a free version to be eligible for the Kindle program and all that stuff like that.
Right,
so we had it up there, though, for like almost 2 years free. And then I got the free meditations up there, and then I got the Akalia course, which is a home correspondence course with videos for each class. Showing you exactly how to do everything that Sid you, and I even created some course, Sid You Created Deluxe, when you create sigils made out of different materials like gold, silver, marble, wood. And so you can actually create the sigils using the sigil creative program that I put together. So there's a lot of good things up there on that site. And then the other site that's dealing with the virtual world that I launched on December 21st, 2012 is matrix-5, F-I-V-E, spelled out, .com. That's matrix-5.com, F-I-V-E. And if you create an account to sign up, we'll bring you in, especially if you've got a business, you're an entrepreneur, photographer, videographer, designer, whatever you into, come in, and I would love to do a joint venture. That's what we're doing now is joint ventures, putting stuff in stores. So we just opened up, we just signed for a health food store. Come inside, because we got actual stores and everything. I got a Moringa store set up in there already. I got a bookstore set up.
Right.
We just put this on for a health food store, and in that health food store, it's going to be like a Whole Foods type thing where we're going to feature all different lines of health products from different vendors. So let's say, Dr. Lin, you got a line of health goods that'll be in there as a so and so line.
Right.
This one got a line, and we're going to have different things in there.
Right.
So come in, because we got office space, we got stores, we got classroom space. We even got space in the movie theaters to feature like independent movie makers and videographers. We could feature your movies in there where the people come in, they pay at the door, the big door opens up, they come in there, they sit down, and they look at the movie.
That's beautiful. Man, that's beautiful.
It's deep. It's real. Y'all got to come check it out. I'm telling you, if you are any entrepreneur, you're doing anything, basically, come in there, and we'll show you how we'll work out these joint ventures inside there.
Well, I know that Abundance Child told us about it a few weeks back at the Summit of the Moors down in Jacksonville, Florida. She was, saying we definitely need to get in contact with you. And that's when I hit you up.
She's flying all around in there.
Yeah.
And everything. We got guilds in there, too. I reinstated the guild system of the ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
So we got everything broken down to guilds. And everything of importance is either done by the guilds, or the guild members. And so we have different guilds. The same way like in ancient times, Imhotep's stonemasons guild built the pyramids.
Right.
We use that same concept of the guild, and everything we build in there is done by the guilds or the guild members. And then everybody's welcome to join. So, put in an application for the guild. We got like fashion, clothing and fashion guild. We have a technology guild. And we just do different joint ventures. Like the technology guild, we just launched something where you might see on Facebook where we help people with their computers, search and optimization, computer viruses, all that's coming from the technology guild and Matrix 5.
Okay.
We're actual technicians and everything. So come on, get down. We got master clothes makers, hat makers, doing fashion lines. All that stuff is going on inside there. So, come between 8 and 10 p.m. Eastern time. That's when we have the managers in there. We do orientations. We kind of like orientate you, show you how to navigate. You could talk inside Matrix 5 and shop malls. When you go in a store, you could be in a shop and somebody else could walk in there. You could talk to them like I'm talking to you right now. Like I can exchange numbers.
Wow.
You can invite them to your house. You could throw parties in your house with avatars or dancing. Whatever.
Gotcha.
Indeed. I'm telling you, I just put a second floor loft in there, put a nice bed in there. The bed, you press a button, you could be laying down reading a book. You could whatever. You could meditate, off the bed, And we got big, giant screens in there, with all kinds of things. So there's a lot going on there. Like I said, it's an actual world.
Right.
And this is when the old ancestors seen that and seen us in there flying around, swimming underneath the water, it was like, that's a whole new world. And so they seen, that's why right before December 21st, 2012, the ancestors came to me and they said, Hakeem, you have to launch Matrix 5 on December 21st, 2012 at exactly 11 p.m. You don't realize that what you're doing is tied in with the prophecy.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I launched it on that exact day. I kept my appointment with Destiny. You don't know what I went through, Mars, to get to that point that day when I launched it that day. many trials and tribulations to get to that point there. And so when I launched that date and I kept my word with the ancestors and that date with destiny with them, I felt so happy because the world that they said, when they say the fourth world will end and the fifth world will be in, they're talking about the end of Matrix 4 and the beginning of Matrix 5.
Gotcha.
Matrix 5 is going to be all sovereigns, no subjects. Remember I told you the formula for Matrix 4 was a handful of sovereigns and all the masses of people's subjects. Well, the equation is going to be changed now. And this new dispensation is going to be all sovereigns and zero subjects. And that, and the way we all be sovereigns is once everybody knows, understands the principles of Akalia and begin to activate and utilize their God powers to change reality, at that point, that's Matrix Fire.
Gotcha.
See, eventually we're going to get to the point where we'll be able to say be, and so shall it be.
Right.
That's fiat. That's divine fiat. I call it fiat reality, just like how this is consensus reality. Eventually in Matrix 5, we're going to get to the point of fiat reality where we'll be able to say be, and so shall it be.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Kung
fire
kung.
Gotcha.
There you go. That's where we headed. That's what we are to right
what
now.
What does that mean?
What, coon fire coon?
Yes, sir.
It mean be and it be.
Okay.
So mote it be.
So mote it be. I get it.
So mote it be.
It's Arabic.
So mote it be.
Mm-hmm.
put down for this, it's so mote it be.
Right.
You know, meaning so might it be. And the Quran of Mecca says, Allah says be, and so shall it be.
Right.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Fiat. You know,
fiat.
I'm so,
still learning.
that's where we headed more. You know, it's just a beautiful time. We're about to finally conquer the plane of things made manifest, the plane of flesh. And we're about to enter into the plane of soul. Remember, people think that because of the plane of soul, it is not fleshy, it's not carnal, it's not real, or not as realistic. But keep this in mind. Have you ever had a dream that while you was in a dream seemed so real? Until you woke up, you didn't realize it wasn't real? That's how consciousness works.
Yep.
Whatever plane is on, that plane, we experience it as being tangibly real.
That's right.
Even though once you wake up, you look back, wait, that was just a dream.
Yep.
It seems so distant. You know, well, that's what it is. You know, keep in mind, like I think Morphe even said that in the Matrix. Have you ever had a dream that was so real? You see what I'm saying? That's what it's like. That's what the plane of soul is like. So we're about to advance, you know. And this, if y'all listen to the Abundance Child radio show I did last Thursday, I talked about the coming conflict and the coming dilemma.
Wow.
And what you built on?
Brother?
Uh-oh. I think we lost him.
I think so.
Yeah, we did. His cord dropped. He must be navigating. Hopefully he'll call back in here in a minute.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
I'll hear some more of that.
yeah, because he was just getting ready to go in.
Yeah, boy.
What I'm going to do right quick then, I'm going to go on and play a song. And hopefully he'll come back on in.
Okay.
Let me see here. I think it's my man Mike on the line, so I'm going to play his joint, Limitless.
All right.
What's up? They've identified these receptors in the brain that activate specific circuits. And you know how they say that we can only access 20% of the brain? A lot of this stuff.
We did it like that, and now we do it like this. I remember I was about 14 years old, telling everyone said I had zero. Just wanted to contribute and be the politics to address some issues. I dropped science because everyone else thought violence, but when I began to speak, it got silent. I found my talent, never became a victim to those vile trends. I found a subject to reach the public, a way to object, a project that could get all out the project. Context that can erase nonsense. Proof for the conscious to make you conscious. Living to give them a rhythm that will uplift.
religion, we just saw a better nation. They say that it's a virtue, but we've got hospital patients who don't have a shred of patience.
Right now.
Right. So,
and, yeah, no doubt.
All right, so,
Appreciate everybody for listening. We're going to be back once
always.
Again next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check us out. And we're going to try to get Brother Hakeem back on here real soon, too, for if we can do part two to this Matrix 5. Because if y'all missed this information tonight, I don't know what's going on. All
right.
We need a mass awakening, and we get ready to head out with that science.
No doubt.
An MC is going to come along, Red Pill, and what he's going to do is he's going to take them bass-driven, root chakra resonating beats, and he's going to be able to fuse metaphysics, because you got to fuse it, because even if you talk high science over those beats, you still lose your audience. He's going to find the perfect way to fuse metaphysics in with dumbed-down nigga shit, and that's going to open up the porthole. So when an MC steps up and does that, ball game.
We've only just
started warming up, man.
It's that new Negro spiritual. We waited for it, here it goes. These rappers, yeah, they better flow. Cause I'm so fucking lyrical, and it's a fucking miracle. Nobody to compare me to, but I don't think you hear me though. So let me make it clear to you. The words that you heard on my verses with the spirits do. Cause I get it to spit, and I stop spitting what I'm hearing too. And I just came to spit the truth, not here to put no fear in you. But the truth hurt, so my verse might be scaring dudes. Let these words stick to your brain, just like you hearing glue. Cause what I'm saying is like a painting, now get a clearer view. People's brains being a slave. And it's terrible, and I find it rather amusing. Yeah, it's hysterical. People waste like round the illusion, and it's material. But when you die, the things that you like, they won't be there with you. So what you niggas need to do is tap into your spiritual and look into your inner you. You will get a bigger view. My third eye open. You know I'm focused. This shit come gradual. It's so osmosis. This nigga here magical. On some hocus pocus, but I'm getting at you. On some Holy Ghost shit. I'm a real nigga, make you feel it in your soul shit. And I ain't on that fucker bitch get money, devil shit. I'm more in the progress and talking evolution. I'm more in the digress and getting hella stupid. I got a vision for some better music. And the gift of rhyme from God, so I better use it. And expose these rappers that's useless. On them tracks that's rapping that foolish shit. That's why these black folks acting like hooligans, claiming that they Christian, Islam, or Muslim. But they God ain't Jesus or Allah. Nowadays, these people praise the mighty dollar. Money is the root of evil. People were the flowers. I just gotta be honest. It's just knowledge and power. And I wanna free your mind up like you blowing marijuana. I'll tell you why I'm a problem. Raps hotter than a sauna mask. Wanna be a bigger black leader than Obama. Take my people from their problems to a life with no more drama. But they gotta look inside of them. Meditate and pray, and they can recognize the God in them. Look inside yourself and see that God is just your consciousness. He dwells in us all. So we gods and we goddesses. But there's only one creator who done made a lot of shit. From the galaxies, the universe, and other cosmic shit. Then he made the planet, fire, air, water, land. One experience what he had. So we did it through a man. Since I'm black, I'm a brag. First man was African. But I'm getting sidetracked. Back to the task at hand. And let me explain what a nigga mean when a nigga sing. That we're divine beings. The real you is your spirit and not your body. You go into the spirit world every time you sleep. That's why most of the prophets got the message in a dream. From the ones that's in the Bible all the way to Dr. King. And now we using me to get a light back to his people and take it from the evil Illuminati. The same ones who own the music and the movie screens that don't do nothing but feed our brains with foolish things. That get the chicks to shake they shit and niggas in a bing. It's like they tricked us niggas mind to get us in a sin. So we could be more of a liking. Black boys acting like they was when they was Viking. Instead of a young god, more like a titan. We in a satanic shit, we more like them. We all like the violence, we all like the murders. It's all in our albums, it's all in our verses. In God we trust, but the money they worship. And if you fuck with they bread, motherfuckers will hurt ya. Ha! What is it worth if you gain the world and lose your soul for this shit? That's like defeating the purpose of your reason at birth. Leaving your worth, and this shit is over, close the curtain. This beat is murder. Thank y'all for y'all's love.
Thanks.